I am joined today by Courtney White, who is an attorney and also the founder of the blog Courthouse Couture, who I have followed for a bit now on Instagram, and I find her, what she does, so cool. As I mentioned, she's an attorney, she's a blogger, she seemingly does it all, which is why I was like, okay, I have to have her on just to talk about all of it. So Courtney, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be on the podcast today.
So I know that I mentioned that you are an attorney. We were talking about this off camera, offline, before we started recording. Would you mind sharing more about what kind of work you do?
Sure. So I've been a licensed attorney since 2010, and I have done a little bit of everything. When I graduated, the economy was terrible, and I opened my own law firm, which was terrifying for me, but I think actually laid a great foundation for what I do with influencing, because I learned how to run a business. And I did everything from family law and criminal law to now I work at a corporate law firm and work as a research attorney. I also, you know, work with my firm's podcast and business development, and something I really care about is I'm on our diversity committee at my law firm.
So I always open by asking what you wanted to be when you grew up, when you were a kid. I feel like I briefly thought that I wanted to be a lawyer, like when I was in high school. And then I was just like, I don't think I could do law school. And obviously took a very different path. But I know so many of my friends who are in the legal field, you know, knew from a young age that they wanted to do it. So I'm curious whether that was your experience.
That was definitely true for me. I knew probably around fourth or fifth grade, I wanted to be a lawyer. And I even told someone when I was doing mock interviewing and learning how to do great interviews as a law student that Felicia Rashad was really my idol. That was the first Black female lawyer that I saw. And that's really why I wanted to be a lawyer, was because of Felicia Rashad's character, Claire, on The Cosby Show.
And what was it like for you in college and law school and just kind of pursuing that goal?
Wow. I think the idealism I had as a child, I wish I could have kept it as I got older, because what happened in college was severe imposter syndrome, fear. I actually dated someone who said that I would probably be a better mom than a lawyer, as if I couldn't do both things. And I really began to doubt myself. I started saying things like, maybe I don't want to be a lawyer. Maybe I want to get a master's, which would have been fine. But I'd always wanted to go to law school. And what I didn't realize what I was experiencing, it's really common for people, especially if they're a first generation lawyer, that level of doubt. And it really extended into law school. In law school, I realized that I had test anxiety. And I noticed it because on one of my tests, I had really studied and I got in the test and I was just kind of looking around and my mind went utterly blank. It was like I couldn't remember anything. It was so crazy. And what's ironic is I had a friend who went through this in medical school. She got a 4.0 in undergrad and stressed herself out the entire time she was in medical school. Again, a first generation doctor. So that was something that I didn't realize. I went to counseling for the first time in law school for that. And I'm really thankful, one, that I went to an HBCU. That was something that I felt I needed, because I had always been one of the only or one of the few in every educational experience I had had from kindergarten on. So by the time I went to college, went to a huge PWI that I loved, but I needed individual attention and people who believed in me and who kept me encouraged and who told me that I could do it. And I felt like I was only going to get that in HBCU. And I don't think I would be a lawyer if I had went to another school. I think I would have quit or left. But that's just me. Like I needed that. And I think people are shocked when I say that. And I try to lead with that because I've had so many law students come to me and they feel the exact same way. And people make it seem like, oh, I was always doing so well. No, that's not my story at all.
Yeah. I think it's so important to have those conversations. You know, that for me is one of the reasons that I started podcasting, because I felt like I was looking around and feeling like everyone else was so successful. Everyone else had it all the way together. not knowing, you know, and then you start talking to people and you're like, oh, it actually was really difficult for them to get where they are. And there are struggles that maybe they haven't shared publicly, but that it's so rarely just like, oh, you know, I decided to do this and then I'm doing it, you know? So we all have our own journeys. So you graduate law school, and did you launch your own firm right out of law school, or how did you, like, what was the timeline?
It was really out of necessity. So first of all, when I was at the end of law school, I kind of felt like, because I worked on Capitol Hill after my second year, I worked with the Committee on Education and Labor. I specifically was really, really interested in education policy. And I felt like, okay, this is what I want to do. I don't know if I necessarily want to practice traditionally, but I was in a class called Texas Practice and felt like I was being led to practice law in Texas. And I was like, I really don't want to do that. I want to pursue policy. And I changed at the last minute, decided to take the bar in Texas. And very similar to Michelle Obama, I struggled with that decision. I hated bar study, and I did not pass the bar the first time by like under 20 points, which was devastating to me because I was like, I didn't even want to do this. And then I get offered a job to work on Capitol Hill. So I was like, now I'm faced with the decision. Should I do that or study for the bar? I decided to study for the bar. I passed the second time, even though even more craziness happened in my life, concluding with my uncle dying a week before the bar exam, which had me in a state of devastation that I wasn't sleeping. So the entire week before the bar exam, I wasn't sleeping. And I ended up passing and doing tremendously better the second time, even with all of that. And I get licensed, and it's the like one of the worst economies ever, and I have no job. So I go back, started talking to some of my professors, and one of my professors said, well, you're a lawyer. You have a job. You're a lawyer. Start your own firm. And I was like, okay, I don't want to do that. So I had to figure out how to start my own law firm, and I did. And I shadowed attorneys like all day. I would shadow them on criminal trials, family law work. And I actually got my first case around that September, which is really key because my cousin was tragically murdered that same month that I got assigned like my very first court appointed case. And it was for a mother that was getting her parental rights terminated. So like I didn't really feel like I even had the space to grieve in that moment because I knew the importance of the work I was doing. And I think a lot of lawyers face that, where so often you have to put this line between the work that you do and what you're personally experiencing. And I grew up in a way that was like I didn't even know myself. And obviously I went to counseling because of that, because of my cousin being murdered. That was obviously a tragedy. But I did have to learn how to separate because my client needed me. If I didn't show up, her kids would have been taken away.
I am, first of all, so sorry for the loss of your uncle and your cousin. I mean, that's just so heavy. I can't imagine going through that while you had so much else going on. But also the importance of the work that you do, I'm really struck by because, I mean, if I phone it in, it's very different. The stakes are much lower, you know? I mean, I look at my friends who are in law or medicine and I'm like, okay, if you show up and you are just like not feeling it, not putting in 100%, like that really affects people. So it's just, I always think that I'm like, it's just so different. It's so wild how some professions have like such an impact on people's lives rather than like me missing it. Brand deadline. it puts it in perspective for me. It makes me so grateful for the work that you do and the work that people like you do. So obviously you're not doing that now. So how did that progress and play out for you?
I think, and I did a video on TikTok about why I will never practice family law again. And it was partially because of this case. And if you remember the why I really wanted to put in the part about me working on Capitol Hill, I really care about policy. And so my client at the time was only 1 year younger than me. I think she was 20. Was I 27 or 28? Either way, I wasn't 30. She wasn't 30. And she already had 6 children and was pregnant with the 7th. And at the time, you know, she needed to, when you get your children taken away, at least in Texas, you are assigned things that you have to do. So you have to make sure you have a stable home. You have to have a job. You have to, you know, have completed like mental health evaluations, all of these things. At the time, there was no way for her to get housing because Section 8 housing was completely closed, like on a national level. They were at a cap with the number of people that could get subsidized housing. And so she couldn't do that. But like, I had to make sure that she got a job. I went with her. We redid her resume. We were doing all of this. I tried to get her mental health evaluated. She could not, which I really want to point out, receive mental health services, even though I think potentially she was slower developmentally. But unless she had major bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, or major depression, she was not able to receive services. That was frustrating because she did need them. I came to find out that she had been sexually abused. One of her children had been sexually abused. She had one of her children that their leg was cut off because she didn't get them to the hospital in time. And of course, she doesn't have full insurance. So they were likely just waiting, but like his leg got infected. So part of his leg had been cut off. Her children, she was leaving them. She didn't have childcare for them. Like, it was the movie Precious, but it was my client. And I had never even experienced anything like that, let alone see it with my insulated, suburban, privileged, even as a Black female existence. I had never seen anything like that. And I was like, there's no way that I can help this woman. And then come, you know, she ends up having this baby. And if that is not devastating enough, she's in an abusive relationship. Which my parents go on to say, you know what, Courtney, she might be a lower level, I'll say sex worker. And then I said, oh, wow, that would explain why all of these children have different dads, just about all of them have different fathers. I had not even thought of that in my own naiveness. And so she's in a physically abusive relationship where she actually shows up to CPS with two Black eyes, and she's also pregnant again. So she ends up having the first baby, the seventh. And when she got there, CPS asked, after she had the baby, a series of questions. The father was yelling at CPS. They told CPS they didn't have a jacket for the baby. It was like the coldest day in Houston. It was 20 degrees or below that. And she had a fever. So they released she had a fever. They ended up releasing her from the hospital eventually. But they told her the baby couldn't leave. They ended up taking the baby from her, the baby that she had just had, like days from her having the baby. And several weeks from that, you know, I end up not seeing her. I'm talking to her on the phone. And like within a month or two later, she's pregnant again with the eighth baby. And I just, one, couldn't even believe that, but I'm trying to help her get through it. I mean, I even got to the point that I asked for the judge to remove me fully from the case because I couldn't handle it. I didn't feel like she was listening to me. I wanted to help her, but I was at a point with my ethical obligations. I didn't feel I could do it. And so what ended up happening is we go to a mediation and she comes there that morning and she said, you know what? I think you're right, Courtney. Maybe I'm not responsible enough to keep these children. This was after she said that because she actually showed up to a hearing and flashed her breasts in open court. Literally, because I told her to wear a suit, but I guess I should have also told her to wear a bra or a tank top underneath because she was adjusting her button and it it fell off. And she goes like this and has flashed the judge, the guardian ad litem, the opposing counsel, who looked at me like, really, you're fighting for this? And I was mortified. And so she ended up showing up to the mediation and she said, you know what, maybe I'm not responsible to keep these kids. Maybe I'll be able to keep the baby I'm pregnant with if I get myself together. And she got in there and she said, so I'm never going to really be able to see these kids again. And they said, no, when you sign over your rights to your children in Texas, that is like the equivalent of the death penalty, but in the civil code. And she goes, okay. And she signs her rights over to her kids. And I am like steps away from emotionally breaking down myself because I'm like, does she fully recognize what she's doing? I'm even questioning, did I do my job? But she fully recognized it. And the only thing that I could think to tell her was that she showed me what true love was because I felt like she did at some level recognize she couldn't take care of them and she couldn't. And to top it all off, I ended up withdrawing from the case, but she ended up losing the eighth baby as well. So she ended up losing all of her children. Through no fault of my own, I tried to advocate for her. I fought with CPS because CPS was like, your client, you know, is pregnant again, and, you know, kept trying to get me to violate attorney-client privilege. But I just learned in that moment, as a lawyer, I cannot solve everything because it is my job to represent and counsel my client. I cannot solve the political, social, legislative issues that may have put this woman in the position she was in. She was in a cycle of systemic poverty. Her mom was impoverished. Her mom actually had custody of her oldest son, but was like, I can't afford to keep any more of these children. And her mom told me, because I called her mom when we left, and her mom was like, if I couldn't get her to do better, why did you think you could? You did everything you could to help my daughter. And then I remember I called my dad and I was just bawling. And my dad said, maybe you need to pick another area of the law. Like, maybe this is not the best spot. Like, maybe you can advocate for things on a legislative level and care about people, but maybe it's too emotionally taxing for you. And I also think because my cousin had been murdered, and my cousin was pregnant when she was murdered, she was very close to having her baby, and her fiance was murdered. It was a triple homicide. It was on CNN. I also think now looking back that that is probably why it was just so emotionally, like, this case of this woman not really seemingly understanding what was going on with her children was just too much for me. And so I ended up going, maybe I do need to have a more corporate approach. And what I'm able to do now is I have been able to do pro bono cases that I care about. Their death penalty, I don't know if that helps. It doesn't. But somehow on the criminal side, I'm able to separate it more than I was in family law. I just think that area for me, it was too much emotionally. And I'm thankful that I figured it out early enough, because some people don't, and they stay in it and end up with compassion fatigue. And that's what I was worried about.
Yeah, I can't imagine the level of burnout that you face if you're dealing with those cases over and over and over again.
And some people do, and it's all they do, and they're able to separate it, and they have children and families. I'm not one of them. I couldn't do it.
Yeah. So I know that you can't go into detail about the work that you do now, but you were kind of just explaining to me on a broad level what kind of law you practice on the corporate side. So I was just curious if you'd be willing to just give a couple sentences about that, whatever you're able to share.
Yeah, I think now I'm totally disconnected from the client, where we're solving problems that they may have. Our clients are all corporate clients, and it may be anything from when I started at my firm, I was doing real estate. So those are real estate transactions. There's no level of emotional tie to that, really, other than you're helping people buy and sell large properties. And what I do now, I'm a little bit more back in the litigation realm, where people have had disputes where they're fighting over contracts or whatever, and I may be helping research or assist them with that. And then I also get to do fun things like do my law firm's podcast and work on diversity efforts at my law firm, which are very, very important to me. Because I think for me, I always need to have a level of purpose in the work that I do. And I think I've still been able to find that. It's just not maybe with the day-to-day work, like with a client.
Well, I would love to switch gears and discuss how I know you, which is through your blog. When did you start blogging?
So I started blogging, if I really was blogging, I guess. I started taking selfies because I was really the only woman. I was doing insurance defense at the time. And I can say, because I don't work for them anymore, I was working for Nationwide Insurance as an attorney. And there were like no women there. And I felt like in law school, we were given very strict guidelines on what we're supposed to wear. Black suits, navy suits, or maybe even if you're being exciting, a charcoal. But that was it. And I was like, this is boring. I don't know if I want to wear that every day, especially to work. If I was in court, that was one thing. But if I was just going to work, I felt like I could start to have fun with my appearance. And I felt like I needed it because I needed a creative outlet. And I just started taking selfies of my outfits. And somebody said, why don't you start an Instagram account? And I was like, what is Instagram? And then I got on, because I think when Instagram was really launching, that was when like I was doing family law and had my own firm. So I ended up getting on Instagram, started taking selfies of my outfits. And that's kind of how it started.
And first of all, I have to say, your closet is amazing. I love the color that you incorporate and just how fun it is. But how have you seen growth over time? Because you've obviously evolved from just like, you know, selfies of your outfits to having an online platform, doing really cool things. Just how has that progressed?
I think for me, I really made an effort to progress with it after my father passed away. So I quit my job in 2014, moved back to Houston because my father was diagnosed with probable mixed dementia, and I wanted to help be a caregiver with my mom. And after my father passed away, I really realized I mean, I think we know we only have one life to live, but I was like, I am just going to get a photographer and make a concerted effort to actually be a little bit more serious about this and see where it goes. And I think it was that step of faith that kind of kept me going. So for me, the reason I still do it is, again, I need the creative outlet. I need the fun from it. And it gives me something else to have purpose in, because one of the things I learned in law school that contributed to my stress is that I have an achievement type personality. So I need to be achieving at things. And one of the things that I was told is I need to find things to achieve in that didn't really have to do with work, career, that I could make fun, even though you can still have a sense of that achievement in blogging. But I needed to kind of have a goal that really had no end. Like, if the goal is just to serve myself and have joy and have fun in it. And I feel like blogging gives me that because it's so different from what I do every day. It's so different. And I can still talk about the things that I care about in a way that I think is serving people without it being tied to my day-to-day job.
I love talking to people who aren't full-time influencers for that reason, because I do feel like at the core of it, it should be fun. And, you know, for me, it's like it isn't the only thing I do, but it is work to an extent. And I often miss when it wasn't because it should be fun, you know? So I love that you're doing that. I'm wondering though, how you stay consistent with your full-time kind of fast-paced job and sharing on Instagram and sharing on your blog. Do you have like a workflow for that, or how do you stay on top of it?
I need to get a workflow, but I have implemented now. I have a personal assistant who helps me with posting specifically, like to know it when people are asking for outfits. He gave me the idea of using mini chats, and that has been tremendously helpful. Because it was one thing to do it during the pandemic, right? When everybody is locked in, you don't really have anywhere to go. But when life started lifing and we started kind of moving into more of a post-pandemic lifestyle, I was just like, this is not like sustainable for real. Like I can't do it, not with my job. I'll miss posting or something else. And I also think I have to kind of, one of the things I do is I accept I'm not going to be great at everything all the time. If I need to really be great over here at work, well, then I can't really get upset if my likes are down on Instagram or something else, because I probably didn't put as much time into it. And honestly, you could put as much time into Instagram as you want and still not get engagement. So I kind of allow myself to not be perfect, which is such a novel concept in our world. And one of the greatest things that has come out of me doing this is I've learned I'm not going to be good at it. I'm not going to be perfect. If I get a post up, I'm just like, I'm so proud of myself. If I learn a new skill in doing like editing or something on a video, I'm like, wow, I learned something new. And I try to find ways, even in that imperfection, to just find joy in it. But a personal assistant has helped tremendously. Like, I wouldn't be able to do this now without help.
Yeah, I feel like outsourcing is such a key. And as you said, embracing that it's not going to be perfect. I mean, Instagram is almost freeing in that way, that it's like, if you were aiming to grow your audience and get a bunch of likes and all, like, sure, there are like sketchy things you can do to make that happen. But if you're doing it organically, like, you are not in control over. I always say, like, the posts that I spend like hours on are the ones that Instagram shows to like three people. And then the random like picture that I just post, you know, spontaneously, it's going to be seen by like a million people. Like, it's just like, that is true. There's no rhyme or reason, it feels. So you kind of just have to roll with it.
Yes, that is absolutely true. And I think it is easy to get frustrated. And I know people get frustrated. And why is this person being seen and I'm not being seen? And I think now I'm just at the point where I'm like, I have so many things going on. Because when TikTok got added and somebody said, Courtney, I really think you should post more on TikTok. I think you'll really like it. And I said, I don't know. Again, I was like, but then like my TikTok is now surpassed my Instagram. I think just because I just get on TikTok and because I started doing like the messy lawyer and talking about giving people like this funny, like legal perspective. But I don't feel like I have to rehearse as much for TikTok. I can just put up content and I literally don't care because I had no goals for TikTok at all. And that was probably best that I didn't have any because it made it so much easier to do. And plus, it's a newer platform and I feel like it's easier to grow when it's newer.
Yeah, TikTok is fun. And I feel definitely like lower pressure than Instagram. You can just share whatever is on your mind for real. But I love hearing that. And I love learning why people blog and share their lives online. Because it's not always easy. It can actually be really exhausting.
It can, because you don't know how people are going to respond to your personal experience. Like, right. You could be sharing something that's personal to you and people will personalize it to their own experience and you just never know how people are going to respond.
Yeah. Well, I was curious whether, I always ask this to creators because I think that it's just like everyone has a different perspective and it's so great to hear. If you have any advice or tips for, I mean, in your case, you could answer it for, you know, aspiring bloggers or aspiring attorneys. I just always ask, like, if there's someone who wants to do what you're doing, do you have any tips for them or like just any quick pointers that you think could be helpful?
One would be just start, because the more that you start overthinking what you're posting, you're less likely to do it. And I would also say, do not compare. That one probably should be number one, because I think it would be so easy for me to go, you know what? I should be posting like little dresses and date night dresses and this and that. But that's not really why I got on. And somebody messaged me a couple weeks ago and said, I found you on Like to Know It. And I am so glad because you're actually a lawyer and you're going to work every day and you are really posting things that I can wear. She's like, other people are posting suits. And she's like, I can't wear that to work, you know? So it just reminded me that is who I am doing it for. That is my audience, for people who are like me, who felt like, I don't really know what I can wear to work. I want to have some options. What can I do? What is okay? What is not okay? And I try to kind of remember that. Like, I obviously will wear other things and dresses and stuff that I like, but I'm really posting it and have that point of view for somebody who can kind of relate to me, or the girl who wants to go to law school and is struggling in the same ways that I have struggled with self-confidence. So I think just really not comparing your journey and your growth, because everybody's niche is different. Some people are doing well and they've got a million followers and they're posting everything that you can buy on Amazon. And that's awesome. That's not really why I got online. And I also learned, the more socially conscious you are in talking about things that aren't always fun, that not everybody's going to follow you when you're kind of talking about those hard issues. And that's something that's so intrinsic to who I am that I can't divorce those two things. Like, I want to be creative, but I'm also going to challenge your thinking about your privilege and racism and policies that need to change, because that's who I am. So that may lose me some followers too. And I've noticed when sometimes I'll say something that I lose followers and it's like, it is what it is. So, you know, making sure that you just start, don't compare. And I would say have fun, because that's going to be the only way that, to me, that you'll keep going. If it becomes too much like work, you will get into the comparison game, because you will start to feel like, oh my gosh, this person is doing this and her following is growing. I need to do that. When really, I think the longer game is trying to be individually yourself and growing in that realm, whatever your personal best is. So that would be my three tips.
I love those. Thank you so much. And Thank you for joining me. I feel like I've learned so much about you and also the legal profession, and it's been great. Where can people connect with you if they want to follow you or learn more about you?
Sure. People can follow me. I am Courthouse Couture on almost all of my social media accounts, on Instagram, on TikTok, on Pinterest. I'm on YouTube, but I don't really post that much. And I'm on Threads as well as Courthouse Couture. So, and people can also find me on my website, www.courthousecouture.com. And if they want to reach me at my law firm, my name is Courtney White, and I work for Jackson Walker Law Firm, www.jw.com.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Asked by Ayanna. I hope that you enjoyed the listen. If you're looking for a way to support the podcast, taking the time to leave a rating or review or sharing it with someone who you think may enjoy it is a huge help and goes a long way. See you next week.